ॐ सहनाववतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः. Good. Welcome back. We're continuing our study of chapter 4. We're getting towards the latter part of the chapter. We'll begin, as always, with some recitation, beginning with verse 29. Repeat after me. Apane juhvati pranam, apane juhvati prane panam tata pare, prane panam tata prana panagati rudva, prana panagati pranayama parayana, pranayama paray. Apare niyata haraha, apare niyata pranan praneshu jukhvati, pranan prane sarve pyete yajna vido, sarve pyete yajnakshapita kalmashaha, yajnakshapita kalmashaha yajna shishtamrita bhujo, yajna shishtamrita yanti brahma sanatanam, yanti brahma nayam lokosya yajnasya, nayam lokosya kutonya kuru sattama, kutonya kuru sattama evam bahuvidha yajna, evam bahuvidha vitata brahma no mukhe, vitata brahma karma jan vidhitan sarvan, karma jan vid evam jnatva vimokshase, evam jnatva vimokshase shreyan dravyamayat yajnad, shreyan dravyamayat jnana yajna parantapa, jnana yajna par sarvam karma khilam partha, sarvam karma khilam jnane parisamapyate, jnane parisam tadviddhi pranipatena, tadviddhi pranipatena pariprashnena sevaya, pariprashnena upadekshanti te jnanam, upadekshanti te jnaninas tattvadarshinah, jnaninas tattvadarshinah yajñātvā napunar moham, yajñātvā napunar evam yāsyasi pāṇḍava, evam yāsyati yena bhūtānya sheshāni, yena bhūtān drakṣasyātman yato mayi, drakṣasyātman yato api chedasi pāp. There's a typo here. Pape bhyah avichedapi pape sarve bhyah papa krittamaha, sarve bhyah papa krit sarvam jnana plave naiva, sarvam jnana plave vrajinam santarishyasi, vrajinam santarishyasi yathai dhansi samidhognir, yathai dhansi samidhog bhasmasat kuru terjuna, bhasmasat kuru ter jnanagni sarvakarmani, jnanagni sarvakar bhasmasat kuru te tata, bhasmasat kuru te nahi jnanena sadrisham, nahi jnane pavitramiha vidyate, pavitramiha vid Tatsvayam yoga samsiddhaha. Tatsvayam yoga samsiddhaha. Kale natmani vindati. Kale natmani vindati. Very good. That first half of the verse is often quoted. We'll get there shortly. So we had finished verse 31. Yes. And our topic that we're just now concluding in the last couple of verses, the topic we've seen, is yajna as a metaphor for karma yoga. Yajna is a ritual worship in which various offerings are made into the fire. And that for actually a long series of about 10 or 11 verses, Sri Krishna uses yajna as a metaphor for the practice of karma yoga. Our topic remains karma yoga, but karma yoga from various perspectives, various aspects, currently from the standpoint of this metaphor of the ritual fire. And just to refresh our memories, how yajna, how that ritual worship symbolizes karma yoga. When you're offering something into a fire, do you offer anything useless or you offer that which is of value? You know, if you wonder why ghee is the most common offering into the ritual fire, we lose perspective today. Today you go down there, you go down to the Patel store down the street and you buy a bottle of ghee for a couple of dollars. It's nothing. But if you lived in ancient India, how many gallons of milk do you think it takes to make 1 liter of ghee? Dozens and dozens and dozens of gallons of milk. And how much labor would go into the production of the ghee from all of that milk? In ancient times, ghee was of great value. Amritam ghritam. They used to say, ghee is immortality. Of course, now it's the reverse today. As if I understand, ghee is saturated fat, and that's what our doctors say, don't eat. But in those days, something to recall, in those days, they didn't have sufficient calories. Today, we have too many calories in our diets. But 2,000, 3,000 years ago, they had a hard time. Especially not eating animal product, not eating meat. They had a hard time getting enough calories in their diet. So you can imagine the emphasis on ghee and the value that ghee had in ancient times. So whatever you're offering into the ritual fire is that of significant value. If any of you have seen a very traditional yajna, especially in South India, you'll see that one of the final offerings, this ritual has been going on for hours, the final offerings will bring one of these very elaborate silk saris, probably worth over $100. That sari goes in the fire. Value. So how does that symbolize karma yoga? In karma yoga, we offer that which is of ultimate value. We offer our lives. We offer our actions moment to moment. What is our lives anyway, but all of our actions? All your activities today, plus tomorrow, plus the next day, and so forth, that's your life. Suppose all of your actions, without exception, are dedicated to following Dharma and living a life of spiritual growth. And certainly there's a sacrifice involved in this. In dedicating your actions to Dharma and spiritual growth, there are so many things that you're not doing. You sacrifice, you give up all those other activities, and you dedicate your actions. And the dedication of your actions to Dharma and to spiritual growth is the equivalent of pouring that ghee, offering that ghee into the ritual fire. So this is the basic metaphor. And we've seen that metaphor in a whole variety of ways over the past 10 verses or so. And now we come to the final verses of that metaphor, using yajna to represent karma yoga. And he concludes, almost conclude, one more verse, but with 32. Evam bahuvidha yajna, evam bahuvidha vitata brahmano mukhe, vitata brahmano karma jan vidhi tan sarvan karma jan vidhi tan evam jnatva vimokshase evam jnatva. So summarizing this whole topic of yajna representing karma yoga, Sri Krishna says evam, thus bahuvidhaha yajnaha. These yajnaha, these various forms, bahuvidha, this yajna, which is bahuvidha, these ritual worships, which are bahuvidha, of many forms, many kinds. All of these various kinds of ritual worship, and that's the last 10 verses, all the different metaphors, different applications of this metaphor. All of these, everything that we've seen in the past 10 verses, all of this is vitataha, all of these are vitataha, spread forth. They're emanated from where? Brahmanaha mukhe. They come forth from the mukha, from the mouth of Brahman. From the mouth of Brahman. Now you might wonder, what is this? Sounds very strange. Is it Brahmaji opens his mouth, then all of this stuff comes out? Well, metaphorically, Brahman as Brahma, as creator, not Brahman, the absolute reality, but Brahmaji, the creator of the cosmos. If you want to symbolize Brahmaji as the source of knowledge, it would make sense to have that wisdom emanating symbolically from his mouth. So in one sense, you can take that as a kind of a poetic expression. From the mouth of Brahman, from the mouth of the Creator, this wisdom has come forth, this wisdom about yajna representing karma yoga. There's another meaning of Brahman that you may not be familiar with. Brahma can also mean Veda. Veda mukhat, from the mouth of the Vedas. And you'll find many places in the Bhagavad Gita and elsewhere where the name Brahma means Vedas. So it has that meaning as well. So this wisdom that Sri Krishna has been teaching, Sri Krishna here admits he didn't make it up. He says it comes from the mouth of Brahmaji, comes from the mouth of the Creator, comes from the Vedas. And all of this, he tells Arjuna, vidhi, O Arjuna, vidhi, understand this. Understand what? Tan sarvan, all of them, which means all of the metaphoric interpretations of yajna, tan sarvan, all of them are karmajan, born of karma. And that's our whole topic. Our whole topic is yajna representing karma yoga. And just to reflect on a few that we've seen, in verse 31, it was to accept the results of our actions as prasad. Taking prasad, yajna shishta, is an aspect of puja and homa. Those who offer the prana into the apana and the apana into the prana, I'm just looking back over our shoulders, so to speak, at some of the verses we've just taken, looking upon the function of your body as a natural unfoldment of the laws of nature. I don't want to read. If we review all 10 verses, we're going to be here for a long time. So we're not going to do that. So he says here, bahuvidha yajna, all of these various interpretations of yajna as a metaphor for the performance of karma yoga, vidhi, O Arjuna, please understand, tan sarvan, all of them are karmajan. All of them are literally born of karma. All of this past 10 verses, all of this represents karma. Here means karma yoga. All of this is a metaphor for karma yoga. Evam jnatva, and having understood this properly, evam, as it was taught, jnatva, having understood. So having understood properly karma yoga, having understood karma yoga, moksha vimokshase, you will be freed. Vimokshase. From karma yoga, you will be freed. Now that's something that we should be a little careful about. Karma yoga in and of itself won't make you free. But without karma yoga, you will never be free. What? Why is Swamiji confusing us? Karma yoga won't make you free. Without karma yoga, you'll never become free. You've heard this here before. We've said that karma yoga, among other sadhanas, is a necessary, remember the language, the logical language, necessary but insufficient cause. Karma yoga is necessary, but karma yoga alone is insufficient. Jnana eva mokshaha, Sri Shankaracharya says, that since bondage is a direct result of ignorance, the solution to the problem of bondage is knowledge. Knowledge gives moksha. But how will you get that knowledge? Not without karma yoga. So karma yoga, among other sadhanas, necessary but insufficient. And just to remind you, the classical metaphor, if you're going to cook rice, what cooks rice? Fire cooks. Nothing else cooks, fire cooks. But as I've joked with you before, if you have 1 kilo of basmati rice and you have fire, and I ask you, please cook some rice, what will you do without a pot? What will you do without water? Pot and water do not cook. But without pot and water, you can't cook. Fire cooks. So you understand then that fire represents the mukhya sadhana, the primary means. Mukhya sadhana, primary means. Fire is a mukhya sadhana for cooking. Therefore, jnana, spiritual wisdom, is the mukhya sadhana, the primary means for moksha. Does it mean that all these other sadhanas are unimportant? Certainly not. Is pot and water unimportant? Pot and water is vitally important, equally important as a fire, but they don't do the cooking. Therefore, they're called avantara sadhana, secondary means. There's a mukhya sadhana and avantara sadhana, primary means, secondary means. So karma yoga, meditation, bhakti, all of our spiritual practices are all avantara sadhana, secondary. Does secondary mean less important? Does secondary mean optional? Hey, how about that? They're secondary, but they're of equal importance. They're secondary, but they're absolutely essential. Why do we call them secondary, just as the pot and water are secondary in a manner of speaking, relative to fire, which does the actual cooking? Okay, enough said. Now we can finish off this topic with the next verse. Shreyan yajnamayad yajnat Shreyan yajnamayad Jnana yajna parantapa Jnana yajna param Sarvam karma khilam partha Sarvam karma khilam Jnane parisamapyate Jnane parisamapyate Shreyan, dravyamayat yajnat jnana yajnaha parantapa. Parantapa, O mighty Arjuna. Jnana yajnaha. Yajna in a form of jnanam, spiritual wisdom. I thought we were talking about karma. We were. So now jnana is the next topic, I should mention. We're finishing one topic and transitioning to the next. The next topic is jnanam, spiritual wisdom. So here, he says, jnana yajnaha, a worship in the form of spiritual wisdom. It's a metaphoric expression. He says that this is shreyan. It's better. Better than what? Dravyamayat yajnat. It's better than a yajna, than a ritual worship, which is dravyamaya, which is involving dravya, various materials, substances offered into the fire. Dravyamaya yajna refers to the conventional homa or havan that were performed years ago and we still perform today. So here he says, what is the best yajna? Is the best yajna Agnihotra, was an ancient yajna? is, you know, there are many, they classify all these different yajnas. There's a dvikala, agnihotra, twice a day you're supposed to do this ritual. Which is the best ritual? That's a question people would ask. They ask, what is the best kind of meditation? What is the best meditation technique? What is the best mantra? Some people will ask, what is the best kind of puja? What is the best kind of yajna? What is the best kind of ritual worship? So he says here that the best kind of ritual worship, dravyamayat yajnat, better than any other kind of ritual worship, what is shreyan, what is best, is jnana yajnaha, worship in the form of spiritual wisdom. That seems to be an odd comparison. Until you reflect on what we just discussed, avantara and mukhya sadhana, secondary and primary means. What is the purpose of yajna? What is the purpose of yajna as yajna, that is the actual ritual worship? Or what is the purpose of yajna as karma yoga, the metaphor that we've seen over the last series of verses? The whole purpose of that yajna, whether it's actual performance of a ritual or if it's a metaphor for karma yoga, the purpose is spiritual growth. Is it not? Just in the most general sense. The purpose of rituals and a purpose of karma yoga is spiritual growth. Isn't spiritual growth supposed to culminate in something? Something called moksha? We saw in a prior verse, vimoksha say, you will be freed. Spiritual growth is intended to culminate in liberation, moksha. Well, tell me then, what is more valuable, the spiritual growth or moksha? The ultimate goal is moksha. The spiritual growth is a means to the end. Sorry to get a little logical on you, but that's the only way to kind of explain this particular portion of the verse. So we make a distinction between means and end. What is of ultimate value is the end. Doesn't mean the means are unimportant, but what is of ultimate importance is the end. The end we seek in spiritual life is liberation, moksha. Jnana yajnaha, ritual in the form of jnanam, spiritual wisdom, is a metaphoric way of saying moksha. The offering of knowledge means here yajna symbolizes, jnana yajna symbolizes that spiritual wisdom which burns ignorance. That metaphor is coming in a couple of verses. The spiritual wisdom which burns away the ignorance that causes bondage, that spiritual wisdom that results in moksha. That's what jnana yajna here means. So that's the goal, that's the end. So the end is more valuable than the means. The means being karma yoga, the means being actual rituals. Again, does it mean that the secondary means are optional or unimportant? They're not optional, they're of equal importance. Which means bhakti is not optional, meditation is not optional, karma yoga is not optional. Prayer is not optional. The way that you do your prayer, there you have choice. If you like to do puja, fine. If you like to do homa, havan, wonderful. The manner in which you do prayer is up to you, but prayer is not optional. The way that you practice your karma yoga is up to you, but karma yoga is not optional. The form of meditation you practice is up to you, but meditation is not optional. This is the point. All right. And this point is made here again. The end versus the means. Sarvam karma akhilam partha partha o Arjuna. Sarvam akhilam karma. Sarvam, all. Akhilam, without exception. Karma, all forms of action. And here, action in the sense of karma yoga, not just karma. Big difference between karma and karma yoga. Before we finish this verse, there's a joke I used to tell often. I don't think I've told it for many years. What is the difference between karma and karma yoga? The joke I used to tell was, when you sweep your kitchen, It's karma. When you come to an ashram and sweep the kitchen, it's karma yoga. What? No way. Absolutely not. You will recall that we said that karma yoga has nothing to do, no, I can't say nothing, karma yoga has little to do with the action, has much to do with the attitude with which you do the action. So years ago, many of you know that I was a manager of Arshavidya Gurukulam, and people would come all the time and say, I'd like to volunteer to do some work. So I'd say, okay, well, you can go to the kitchen and do some work there. And one thing I noticed is if they were given a choice between being on the front counter and serving people, or they could be in back washing dishes, which do you think they chose? Most volunteers. They like to be in front serving everyone so that everyone can see what a good sevak they are. And what a good, so I'm doing my sadhana, I'm doing my karma yoga, I'm serving everyone. As opposed to being in the back part of the kitchen where no one will see you washing pots and pans. Now tell me, who is really the karma yogi? It's a matter of attitude. The person who's out front serving for the sake of being seen by others as being a good volunteer, that's not karma yoga at all. Look at the attitude. On the other hand, the one who goes into the back and washes the pots and pans, there is the karma yogi. So you see, it's all a matter of attitude. In the same way, if you're sweeping the ashram kitchen because you want to demonstrate what a good volunteer you are, that's not karma yoga. But if you're at home, sweeping your own kitchen because you know it's your duty to set aside your own agenda for the sake of fulfilling your duties, for the sake of fulfilling dharma, if that's your attitude as you sweep your own kitchen, you are indeed a karma yogi. You see, it's all a matter of attitude. So the difference between karma and karma yoga is attitude. To act, and just to go way back to chapter 2, to perform an act for the sake of the results is karma. To perform an act not for the sake of the results, but for a bigger purpose, the purpose being your spiritual growth, that is karma yoga. So here, in the end of this verse, karma here refers to karma yoga. Sarvam akhilam karma, all actions performed with the attitude of karma yoga, jnane parisamapyate. Parisamapyate, they get fulfilled, jnane, in knowledge. They conclude in knowledge. They lead to knowledge. They are a means to the end. Karma yoga, all forms of karma yoga are a means to an end. Jnane parisamapyate. They lead to moksha. They culminate in the spiritual wisdom that destroys ignorance and bestows liberation. All right. And with that verse, we finish one topic and introduce the next. So the prior topic, yajna, is concluded with this verse. The next topic has everything to do with jnana, spiritual wisdom, and especially the power of spiritual wisdom to transform. We're going to see that brought out in a very vivid way in the next topic. Next topic will go on for actually quite a few verses, pretty much to the end of the chapter. This will be pretty much the last topic in the chapter, so let us proceed. Tadviddhi pranipatena. Tadviddhi pranipa pariprashnena sevaya pariprashnena upadekshanti te jnanam upadekshanti te jnaninastattva darshinah jnanitastattva darshinah. Tat vidhi. Tat, that. That what? That knowledge. The knowledge that was referred to in a prior verse. That knowledge, that spiritual wisdom, the spiritual wisdom that destroys ignorance and bestows liberation, that knowledge, vidhi. You should understand that knowledge. O Arjuna, vidhi. That you should understand. How do you say it? Samjho. Same meaning. Samjho. Understand it. Understand it how? We've been talking a lot about means and end. If the end is cooking the rice, the secondary means are pretty important, are they not? The pot and the water. Absolutely. In fact, if I were to ask you a trick question, of the three, fire, pot, and water, which is most important in cooking rice? And I said trick question, right? So the fact that it's a trick question suggests it's not any one of the three. They're all equally essential. One is primary, the other two are secondary, but it's not that one is more important. They're all of equal necessity. So here we're not talking about cooking rice. If we go on talking about cooking rice, you'll all get hungry and be look forward to the class being done and go home and get some lunch. But here, we're not talking about cooking rice. We're talking about, pardon the metaphor, we're talking about getting cooked. Not cooking the rice. Getting cooked, which means two steps. One is preparation, and preparation followed by gaining knowledge. So gaining knowledge, jnanam, is the goal, but a lot of things go into the preparation. Just as you need that water and pot, in the same way, to get this knowledge, there are many factors that are necessary. Secondary factors, but necessary. So what are some of those secondary factors? So how, tat vidhi, Arjuna, you should get that knowledge. How? Pranipatena. Pranipata literally means, nipata means to fall down. Pranipata, to fall completely down. It's actually, it's often explained as a sashtanga namaskar, where you stretch yourself out on the floor as a form, as in prostration before a deity or before a holy person. This is the literal meaning of pranipata, is to perform prostration. So to get knowledge, is it necessary to stretch yourself out on the floor? Well, stretching yourself out on the floor could be viewed in a number of ways. One as a cultural expression, and let's look at this a little bit. Sometimes cultural expressions like namaskara, like prostrations, are done very mechanically for cultural reasons. You do it because you're supposed to. And, you know, in some families, you're supposed to touch your parents' feet when you arrive or when you leave. So you do that, and you may do it very mechanically because you've done it for decades and that's what you're supposed to do. Well, what's referred to here is not the mechanical performance of an act of obeisance, of this prostration. What's referred to here, again, is an attitude. What is the attitude of pranipata? Pranipatena, by that, by prostration. If you translate it literally, gain this knowledge by prostration. And then somebody will interpret it. Yeah, the guru comes, you prostrate before the guru. The guru is teaching, and instead of listening to the guru, what are you doing? Prostrating. The guru doesn't want you to prostrate to him or her. The guru wants you to listen, and not just listen. The guru wants you to understand. And it's very possible that you are listening without understanding. And so here, A deeper understanding of this pranipata is an attitude of humility. After all, what does prostration symbolize? If you think about the symbolism, if you touch the feet of a holy person, what does that symbolize? Why do you touch the feet? Why not touch the nose? Swamiji, how are you? So, or the head. How are you, Swami? So, touching the feet is an act of humility. It's the lowest part of the person, and by touching the lowest part of the person, you symbolically put yourself below the person. It's an expression of humility. That's why no other part of the body is touched. So the whole idea of touching someone's feet or prostration, the whole idea of that is humility. It's not even an act, it's not necessarily an act of worship, because the one you're prostrating to may or may not be deserving of worship. For example, living in Rishikesh, the tradition is anyone who wears this cloth, you can go and touch their feet. That's the tradition. If they're wearing this cloth, touch their feet. How do you know if they know anything about Vedanta, if they've ever read the Bhagavad Gita, if they know a word of Sanskrit, if they've ever meditated or prayed in their life? They may not have done any of that. No prayer, no meditation, no Bhagavad Gita, nothing, but they wear this cloth, and you can still prostrate to their feet. Why? That prostration is not an act of worship to the person. In fact, we don't worship people in the tradition. We worship God. Of course, we can worship God in the form of a person, but really speaking, that act of prostration or touching the feet has less to do with worship and reverence, has much more to do with humility, which is a value that almost everyone can benefit from. So you touch the feet, no matter who they are. This helps to instill in our hearts an attitude of humility. Of course, our goal is not merely to become humble. Our goal is to gain this knowledge. What is the connection between knowledge and humility? Because it says, tadvidhi pranipatena. Arjuna, you should get this knowledge. Now I'll interpret. You should get this knowledge through humility. What does humility got to do with knowledge? Humility means understanding that I don't know. Recognizing, acknowledging, I don't know. I need help. I need guidance. I need the guidance of a guru. There lies the humility. Pranipatena, with this attitude of humility, recognizing that my spiritual growth depends on proper guidance. This guru can give me proper guidance. Therefore, let me seek out the guru's assistance. This is the attitude of humility. So pranipatena, literally through prostration, or by interpretation, through the attitude of humility. Pariprashnena, also through asking. Pariprashna. You don't just sit in front of the guru and admire the guru. A memory sticks in my head very vividly, and I've told you this before. When I was in Chennai many years ago, Pujya Swamiji was... Swami Dayananda, my guru, was giving a lecture series in this huge auditorium, seated maybe 1,000 people, forget which one it was. And so anyway, every day, it went on for maybe 7 days of, 7 evenings of lecture. He would sit there and the hall would fill up. And I noticed every day of the lecture series, the several rows in the far back were filled with all these old Tamilian ladies who didn't understand a word of English. The lectures were all in English, only English. Several rows of old ladies who didn't understand English, they would sit in the back every class. Why? They were appreciating the guru. This is guru bhakti. This is reverence of the guru. This is worship of the guru. There's nothing wrong with it, But what does a guru want? If the guru has an agenda, is the guru's agenda that more people should worship me? How's that? Is that the guru's agenda? Or is the agenda that people should understand what I'm saying and grow as a result? That's the guru's agenda. So these ladies in the back row, very pious, and so I certainly don't mean to put them down, but that's not exactly the point of a lecture. The point of a lecture is that they should understand. Here, pariprashnena, by asking, by engaging in dialogue, by being an active, engaged student, as opposed to someone who is passively sitting in a back row, just soaking it in, as it were, without understanding a word. So pariprashnena, by being active, by being engaged, by being a good student, and by asking questions. It literally means by asking questions. And what a wonderful tradition that says that you have to ask questions. That's what it says. If you want to understand, you must ask questions. This is a point you may not appreciate unless you compare it with some other traditions, other religious traditions and other teachers that say, don't ask questions. Don't. Just believe. Whatever I say, you just believe. Why? That's what our scripture says. The scripture says so. I'm telling you that. Don't ask questions. Just believe. Is that what Sri Krishna says here? He says the opposite. He says you must ask questions. Why? It's not merely a matter of belief. It's something that you have to discover. And we're going to see that verse coming up shortly about the distinction between Shraddha and Jnanam. We'll see that. Not in this class. Next class. Okay. Where are we? So, Tadvidhi, Arjuna, this spiritual wisdom is to be understood, pranipatena, through the attitude of humility, pariprashnena, through asking or through being a committed, dedicated student, and also sevaya, through service. And once again, does a guru want, pardon me for being a little bit silly here, does a guru want you to massage his legs? You know, in India, this is the thing. You have to go and massage the guru's legs. Is that really what the guru is a teacher. The guru wants you to understand. If the guru has some physical pain, fine, massage the legs, but that's not the point. The point is, so here, sevaya, through service, does not mean massaging the guru's legs. It does mean through whatever service is necessary to make the teachings available. The guru may have some needs. You should see to the guru's needs. Or we could interpret it in an even broader way, seva in the sense of karma yoga. A life of service, a life dedicating our actions to help others for the sake of spiritual growth, our own spiritual growth and theirs, so we can also interpret it in that way. So in these ways, we talked about primary and secondary means, mukhya sadhana and avantara sadhana. So if the mukhya sadhana is knowledge, jnanam, what are some of the avantara sadhanas, some of the secondary means include pranipata, an attitude of humility, pariprashna, asking questions or being a dedicated student, and seva, service, either literal service to the guru or in a broader sense, karma yoga. Upadekshanti te jnanam. Te, them, those who? Those teachers who in the second line, te, those who are jnaninaha, those who have jnanam, they have wisdom. They are tattva-darshinaha. What a beautiful expression. Tattva-darshi, one who has seen the truth. That's literally what it says. Tattva-darshi, someone who has seen the truth, seen the reality. And of course, it's a metaphoric meaning. Have you ever seen a truth running around? Truth is not something you see, so to see is a metaphor for to understand. When we use the same metaphor in English, do you see what I mean? We use that expression commonly. Do you see what I mean? My meaning is not available to your eyes. It's available to your mind. So it's a metaphoric usage. So tattvadarshi, someone who has discovered the absolute reality. And the reason this word to see is used, because seeing is so immediate. You see, it's right in front of you. It's not abstract, it's not remote. So tattvadarshi is not someone who knows about Vedanta. Someone who knows about Vedanta, someone who knows about the Bhagavad Gita, someone who knows about the Upanishads and Vedas, etc., that person is not a tattvadarshi. They don't have immediate direct knowledge. A tattvadarshi is someone who has used the Bhagavad Gita and Upanishads to discover for himself or herself their true nature, the reality within. All right. So those tattvadarshinaha, plural, those who have discovered reality, personally discovered reality, those jnaninaha, those enlightened ones, those wise ones, te, they, what will they do? Upadekshyanti, they will give, they will impart. What will they impart? Jnanam, knowledge. They will impart knowledge to you. When will they impart knowledge to you? When you are pranipata, when you have the right attitude of humility. When? Pariprashna, when you ask them. I told you this before. Many years ago, someone asked my guru, Pujya Swami Dayananda, why do you teach? You could do so many things. Why do you teach? You could just sit in your Rishikesh ashram and relax, watch the Ganga flow by, have such a peaceful, contemplative life. Why do you continue after four decades to travel around the world teaching incessantly, and nowadays in spite of failing health? Why do you continue to teach? And his answer then and now is this: I teach because you ask me to. That's it. And that's what the word here says. Pariprashnena, by asking. When you have the right attitude, pranipata, when there's pariprashna, when you ask, and when there's seva, the appropriate preparations are made, then those wise ones, upadekshyanti, they will impart that knowledge to you. And about that knowledge, yadnyatva napunar moham, yadnyatva napunar evam yasyasi pandava, evam yasyasi yena bhutanya sheshani, yena bhutanya shesh drakshasyatman yathomayi, drakshasyatman yathomayi. Yat jnatva, having known which, having gained this knowledge, the knowledge that's imparted to you not by scholars, not by pundits, but by tattvadarshis, those who have personally discovered that reality. So having imparted that knowledge to you, then yat jnatva, on your side, having understood, having gained that knowledge personally, na punaha moham evam yasyasi pandava. Pandava, o Arjuna, na yasyasi punaha moham evam. You will not undergo punaha again moham, delusion, confusion, ignorance. Having gained this knowledge, you will not again enter into a state of confusion or delusion. Now, what's being said here is actually a little subtle. Sometimes in life, you get rid of something and it comes back. How about the dirt on your kitchen floor? To go back to that metaphor. So you get rid of it one day, and several days later, what happens? It's back. So you clean it again, and it comes back again. So you go on cleaning and it goes on getting dirty. So many things in life, you get rid of them and they come back. But here what Sri Krishna is saying is tat jnatva, having understood this, and understood doesn't mean in an intellectual sense. It means in the sense of your own personal discovery. To know that something called Atma is described as Satchit Ananda, this kind of knowledge is useless, absolutely useless. But for you to discover that the consciousness by which your thoughts are known, listen carefully, the consciousness by which your thoughts are known existed before your birth and will continue to exist after your physical death, and that that very consciousness by which your thoughts right now are known, that consciousness is unchanging. That consciousness has no edge, has no boundary, has no limit. This is the discovery we're after. That's what we call jnanam, spiritual wisdom. It's not information. It's not abstract. It's not theoretical. It's an immediate personal discovery of the truth of who you are. Yat jnatva, and having known that, having discovered that, na yasyasi punar moham, you will never become confused again. The confusion, the ignorance doesn't come back. When you discover your true nature, it's not something you forget. Suppose you meet a friend, someone that you haven't seen for 20 years, and then they show up one day, and you see them, you don't even quite recognize them, but they introduce themselves to you. They say, oh, remember that person you knew 20 years ago? I am that person. You have that moment of recognition. When you see them tomorrow, will you have forgotten them? So having recognized who they are yesterday, tomorrow you're going to remember them, next day you're going to remember them. That ignorance that came in that ensuing 20-year period, whatever ignorance was there, is gone forever. So here, when you discover your true nature, that ignorance and confusion will not recur, will not come back. That knowledge, yena, what kind of knowledge? The knowledge, yena bhutani asheshani drakshyasi atmani yatha. Yataha. There's something wrong. Yato. Yato mayi. Yataha mayi. Yeah, yataha mayi. Yato mayi. Okay. That knowledge, yena, by which bhutani, creatures, asheshani, without exception, drakshyasi, you will see, atmani, in yourself, ataha, and then mayi, in me. You will see in yourself and in me. Let me explain this. You know, there are some gurus who say, this is a funny observation. Two categories of guru. One category of guru says, I am enlightened, I am a divine being. Another category of guru, very different kind of category, says, who cares about me? You are divine, and I will make you discover that divinity. Very different perspective. One guru says, I am enlightened, therefore I am divine. But the guru we want is not that guru. The guru we want is the one who sees the divinity in us, and the guru who's committed to helping us discover the divinity in us. And that's very carefully what Sri Krishna is saying here. He says, with this knowledge, yena, with this knowledge, drakshasi, O Arjuna, you will see, means you will discover. You will discover what? Asheshani bhutani. You will discover everything that exists. And he does say, you will discover everything that exists, mayi, in me, Sri Krishna says. But that's not all he says. you will discover everything that exists in me, Sri Krishna, as an incarnation of Lord Vishnu. Of course, we would expect to see the cosmos in Sri Krishna, but he doesn't merely say Mayi, like when Yashoda, you remember the story, Sri Krishna having eaten the dirt as a child, and Mother Yashoda once spit out all that dirt, and she pries his mouth open to get the dirt out. And when she pries his mouth open, she looks inside the mouth, and what does she see? The cosmos in this child's mouth. So here Sri Krishna is perhaps echoing that story. Drakshasi, you will see asheshani bhutani, everything that exists. You will see everything that exists mayi, in me. But he also says atta, and atmani, in yourself. So here, the guru is not saying, Sri Krishna is a guru. Sri Krishna's guru is not merely saying, my nature is divine. He's saying, your nature is divine. Everything that exists, exists in you, which is a philosophical way of saying that you are the divinity because of which everything exists. That reality we understand as satyam jnanam anantam brahma, the reality because of which the cosmos exists. You are that reality, tattvamasi. That's what the Mahavakya means. That's exactly what exactly what Sri Krishna is saying here. You will discover that truth, not just in me, an incarnation of Lord Vishnu. You will discover that truth of yourself. Okay, one more verse. This next verse, the last verse we'll see today, is continuing to talk about the transformative power of this knowledge. And just to introduce a verse, does information transform? When you are better educated about the politics and economy of the United States, that education may make you a better citizen and may be more effective when you go to vote for whoever you voted for, if you're voting. But that kind of knowledge, that kind of information, doesn't truly transform who you are. This knowledge, this spiritual wisdom, is absolutely transformative, and that's what this next verse is talking about. Let's see the verse, and then I'll explain. Api chedasi papebhyah, api chedapi papebhyah, sarvebhya papakritamah, sarvebhya papakrit, sarvam jnana plavenaiva, sarvam jnana plavenai, vrajinam santarishyati, vrajinam santarishyasi. See, a second person. Good. What language here? There's a typo up there. Papebhyaha, not papubhyaha. Apichet, suppose. Asi, suppose you are papebhyaha sarvebhyaha papakritamaha. Papakrit means sinner. Someone who commits a papa is papakrit, sinner. Papakrit taraha is a bad sinner. Papakrit tamaha is the worst of sinners. Look at that. Papakrit, papakrit tara, papakrit tama. Like in English, we have this ER and EST endings. In Sanskrit, tara and tama. So papakrit tama. Suppose you are the worst sinner. Worst is always comparative, right? So I'm more of a sinner than the Dalai Lama. That doesn't sound so bad, does it? I am not as good as a Dalai Lama. I'm more of a sinner than a Dalai Lama. That doesn't sound so bad. But suppose you say I am a worse sinner than Saddam Hussein or Adolf Hitler. That has a very So worst means who do you compare yourself to? And it says, sarvebhyah papebhyah, worse than any other sinner. Api chet, suppose asi, you are papakritamaha, the worst sinner, worse compared to who? Sarvebhyah papebhyah, compared to all other sinners, you are in first place. How's that? Among all those sinners, you have qualified yourself as the first rank sinner. He says, even then, apichet, even if that were true, even if that were true, sarvam vrijinam. You have to connect these words. Sarvam vrijinam. Vrijinam also means papa, sin. Sarvam vrijinam, all sin, all evil acts, all sins. Santarishyasi, you will cross. Sarvam vrijinam, santarishyasi, you will cross all sin. Even if you are the worst among all sinners, you are the number one sinner, even then, all of that sin, you will cross. How? A beautiful poetic expression here. Jnana plavena eva. You will cross it on a plava. Plava means boat. What kind of boat? Jnana plava. The boat of knowledge. The boat of knowledge will carry you across an ocean of sin. Now that's the literal meaning of the verse. There's a very profound metaphoric meaning as well, which we'll save for the next class. But without getting into that metaphoric meaning, the very literal meaning here says that no matter what your prior behavior has been, this knowledge is so transformative, it can free you from all of that sin. How is that possible? If you have committed the sin, is there such a thing as being totally absolved from that sin? Let me just, a few closing comments here just to make the significance of this verse clear. We'll come back to this verse in the next class, but there's something I'd like to make clear at the end of this class. There are some religious traditions that say if you sin, you can pray for forgiveness and God will forgive you for your sins. Now, this is believed in other religious traditions. If you are forgiven for your sins, presumably that means that you're no longer responsible for the consequences of those sins. So if you rob someone and then you are freed from your sins, presumably you don't have to pay the person back. And I don't mean to be representing any particular religious tradition, but I'm saying if we look upon this idea of forgiveness in a very simplistic way, to be forgiven of your sins means you don't bear the consequences for it. There's no equivalent concept in the Hindu tradition. If you sin, you bear the consequences for those sins. No such thing as forgiveness. You did it, you bear the consequences. There's no such thing. In another class I said, there's no such thing as a karmic eraser. The whole doctrine of karma says that once you've committed an act, the results must come to you. And in another class we explained that prayaschitta, the so-called expiatory karmas, do not erase the effects of the other karma, but rather the prayaschitta karmas invoke punya karma, invoke blessings which help soften the effects. It's not a karmic eraser. The whole doctrine of karma says you do an action, you will get the result. Period. That's the doctrine of karma. Then, what is this verse talking about? If it says that if you are the not just a bad sinner, but the number one sinner, even then you can escape. So to the jnana plava, the metaphor of a boat, is something that takes you away, something that takes you across and away. So it suggests then that you can escape the consequences of your sin by getting on this boat. How will this boat of knowledge help you get away from the sin? After all, the doctrine of karma says if you committed the sin, you're stuck with the results. You cannot get away from it. Then how does this jnana plava, the boat of wisdom, how does that help you escape sin? I'll give you the short answer now. We'll come back to this verse in the next class. The short answer is this. Who commits the sin? Who? The one who commits the sin bears the consequences. Absolutely. But who commits the sin? And the question to ponder is, does Satchidananda Atma commit a sin? Your true nature, that consciousness I referred to before, the consciousness by which all your thoughts are known, that consciousness which existed before your birth and which will survive the death of your body, that consciousness which is unchanging, has no boundary, has no edge, therefore is limitless. Does that Shuddha Chaitanya, that pure consciousness, does that one commit a sin? Not possible. So this is a solution. The knowledge of your true nature being a consciousness which is not capable of sinning. This is how that jnana plava, the boat of wisdom, will help carry you across. We want to come back to this point. Also, I want to see this verse in a broader sense. So we'll continue with that verse in our next class. I should mention that our next Bhagavad Gita class is not next Saturday, because next Saturday we are celebrating Deepavali. So next Saturday, instead of the meditation and Gita classes, please come at 11 o'clock. We have a nice celebration planned. We'll do some puja together. We'll have some chanting. I'll have a nice discourse on the occasion. We'll have light prasad afterwards. There's a sign-up sheet over on the counter. You can sign up to bring some food that'll be served as prasad. So please, we only have 1 week to fill out that sign-up sheet. So please make sure the sign-up sheet for the prasad, make sure that it's filled by before you all leave today. So that will be next Saturday. And then next Sunday, we'll have a bhajan session. And the bhajans will be on the Deepavali theme. Tomorrow, we have our teen class at 11 o'clock. We'll have satsang at 6 p.m. And perhaps we can talk about some more of this verse a little bit in satsang tomorrow. Next, this coming Tuesday, excuse me, just a moment. This coming Tuesday is the actual date of Deepavali. And it's a date when we usually have our Tuesday Vedanta class. I have a question for you. Some of you may have a family gathering or some other activity on this coming Tuesday night, which would prevent you from coming to class on Tuesday. So I have a question for you. Those of you who attend, listen carefully, those of you who attend Tuesday night's class, how many of you would find a conflict with other family activities? Please raise your hands. Okay. So for that reason, we will not have class on Tuesday. I'll send out an announcement. There will be no class on Tuesday so that you can celebrate Deepavali at home. And lastly, I hope this Hurricane Sandy didn't cause many of you too much difficulty or damage. Here at the ashram, we've had just some minor damage, a little flooding in the basement, some trees down. We were without power for about 10 days, as many of you know. I want to thank, we had volunteers helping, getting gasoline, standing in line to get gasoline for our generators. So with a generator, we were able to have light and heat here, so there was no big problem. Of course, we couldn't have the classes. Volunteers also helped clean up everything after all of that, so I want to thank all the volunteers who helped out as a result. We'll conclude with our prayers and our team.